This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Purdue University Northwest is going to be holding its what are called preview events coming up. One of them is going to happen here this month. It's on October 19th at the Hammond campus, and the other is November 16th at the Westfield campus. To find out more about the events, and they had another name, and I'm sure that our guest is going to be able to explain it better than I could possibly ever explain. Stefan Tighe II is the Associate Director of Recruitment and Events. He is with the Undergraduate Admissions Office at Purdue University Northwest. And Stefan, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
Well, if you will first explain, I guess the name maybe throws people off. Preview Northwest Indiana, a preview Purdue Northwest, I should say, maybe throws people off, but that's better known, I guess, the old name was what, Open House?
Yes, it was Open House. Uh-huh. So a few years ago, probably about 2 years ago, we decided to change from Open House to do something a little bit more extravagant, if you say, called Preview PNW. And so we wanted to do Preview PNW because we really wanted our students and our prospective families to really get a chance to picture themselves being a part of Purdue Northwest. So on those days when we host this event, we're just allowing ourselves to the students to preview what our campus is all about, what our culture is here at Purdue Northwest.
From what you know, how many years has this been going on there on the campus, either the Hammond campus or the Westfield campus or both?
So this has been going on for a while, Chris. I want to say even back to when I was touring campuses back in 2010, we've been hosting this kind of event.
Well, tell us more about how this particular event, since you have two campuses to work with here, did anything change in particular when Purdue University Northwest brought together the Hammond campus and the Westfield campus into one university?
Yes, so we definitely had some room to change this event to kind of gauge and see what our students can really get a chance to view. So one of the big changes were, first with the name, of course, was Preview PNW, but we kind of changed the layout of the event. So before it was kind of set in stone where you will come onto campus and we basically would tell the student, okay, you're going to do this throughout the day. Whereas now we basically have a whole lineup of different things that you can do. You can pick and choose, have the option to either sit on a student panel or sit on a parent panel for the parents. You can go through a resource fair and learn all about the university. You can go to different college showcases. So that was one of the big changes. Now also another change was just aligning the event. So it's the same event on both campuses. So that way a student can go out to the Hammond campus and do the event, but also experience what the Hammond campus has to offer, but also then go out to Westfield and experience what our Westfield campus has to offer.
I guess you really do have to really, besides sit in and look and talk to people and within the buildings, you have to get out on campus and walk around. You have to use a little shoe leather and go out there and really experience personally what being on the campuses are like. They're both unique in their own special way.
Correct. And this is not just for our campus. That's what you said of going out and visiting. That's good for any campus that any student is looking for. So that's really how you're going to get a chance to really see if it's going to be a good fit for you. I know when I was going through my experience a few years ago, that's really what made me determine. I knew in my head I kind of wanted to go to this school, and this school. But then when I went to go visit some of those schools, it just wasn't a good fit. So that's why it's very important that students and their families come out to events like Preview PNW. And if they can't make those kind of events, just go out for a campus tour. Like on our campus, we host campus tours Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. So that way students can actually come and just get on campus, walk the grounds, sit on a bench that's on the campus play yard and things like that, just so they can see if they really picture themselves being a part of that university.
Did you find in organizing this year's event coming up, this year's Preview Northwest, Purdue Northwest, did you find that they had an opportunity to be able to break things up as you could go, just as you said, not only tour the campus, but meet people, and this was a better opportunity than maybe just a regular garden variety campus tour?
Yes, most definitely, because with so many departments and some student orgs are there, and faculty and staff being right here on hand for Preview PNW, that's the added bonus over a campus tour. During a campus tour, most of the times you're just touring campus and meeting with our tour guide to our students on campus where you can ask them their student perspective. Mm-hmm. You get to meet with admission. But on a previous ENW, you kind of get the full package all in one day, where you get to talk to those faculty and staff. You get to talk to department heads. You get to talk to student orgs. You get to talk to leaders within different departments, for example, the Career Center or even Disability Access Center. You get to talk to those people that you'll be working with during your 4 years here while you're on campus.
Now, if you will, get us through each one of the particular events. The first preview, Purdue Northwest, is going to be on October 19th, Saturday, and it'll be on the Hammond campus. Tell us how that is going to set up, and then take us through the preview Purdue Northwest that's going to be happening the following month at the Westville.
Okay, so, so as you mentioned, Hammond campus is going to be on Saturday, October 19th. That event starts at 8:30. Check-in will begin at 8 o'clock. So when the students get here, we'll welcome them to campus. With a quick little video, and we hear from some people that's on our campus. From there, they have the option to go to a college breakout for a showcase. If I'm thinking about studying in communication, I'm going to go to our CHESS showcase. CHESS just stands for College of Humanities, Education, and Social Sciences on the campus of Purdue Northwest. So that way I can kind of hear all the things what the college are doing, hear about our radio and television studio that's on campus for our communication students, hear about some study abroad opportunities that's available. Then from there, we kind of go into different breakout sessions like the student panel, parent panel, and then last but not least, we have our resource fair. The resource fair is probably the biggest portion of the day because literally you get to talk to anybody that's anybody on campus, just to get more information about things that's valuable to you. And then we'll finish up the day with lunch, Chris. Everybody loves free food.
Now we take it to November 16th. That's the second of the two preview PNW. It's going to happen on the Westville campus. Tell us about that.
So on the 16th in Westville, the event is going to be the exact same as it is in Hammond. Only difference is we're just going out to our Westville campus, and we're going to do just basically the same thing on that campus.
When you set up organizational programs like this where you get people to come on campus and actually do some visiting if they haven't done on their own, what kind of opportunities do you think this is like in trying to get high school students really ready for the process? They're all uptight, as their parents probably are too, about the FAFSA forms and everything else they have to do, especially if they're seniors, much less if they're juniors. What does this type of opportunity help make it easier for them to be able to get the process at least started, if not already going?
Yeah, so this event for us, we track, sometimes we even get middle schools that come to
really?
This event, but we get freshman students, we get sophomores, juniors, and seniors. With our juniors, it's a perfect time because now you're kind of going out, probably one of your first visits. And so now you're going out just seeing what different campuses have to offer. So then you probably have like a long list, and now you can start looking at different schools, checking out different schools that may have a good fit. So then when time senior year comes, you have your short list of schools. For our seniors, as you mentioned, the FAFSA just opened on October 1st, so you have that. You have SAT and ACT tests that you're probably doing. And outside of just educational things, you have your own life as well. So a lot of schools have homecoming around this time and football season with sectionals and volleyball. So you're trying to do things like that. But it's good just to get on campus just so you can kind of speak with our financial aid team. Just so if you do need help with doing that FAFSA, we have a team here that's ready to help you. Our admission staff is here ready to help you discuss the application process. We're doing apps on that day, waiving application fees as well on that day. So we're just here to help and just really show you what we have to offer. But as I mentioned, we're just here to help and serve the students that's coming here.
Now, do you have this opportunity with events like this at both campuses to get students, family members, and visitors more acquainted, for example, with the fact that the Purdue Northwest is a member of the NCAA Division II athletics teams? There probably may not or may not be a game underway that afternoon on that particular Saturday, I guess either Saturday in October or in November, but at least they do get a chance to check out the fields and the facilities.
Correct. So with us now being NCAA Division II is very exciting, not only on campus, but in the communities where our campuses reside. So with that, we're always mentioning and telling our students about that. And just because they, like you said, they may not even know that we are part of the NCAA now. During the fall, like you mentioned, I don't think there's any games or anything going on that day. But I know normally in the springtime, there's always a baseball and softball game. So our guests are able to go over to those games after our event ends. But during that time, they can check out our gym facilities and even our softball and baseball facilities as well.
Now, I know that you want to keep a good head count of all the people that are interested, the students, the family members, visitors, and the like are going to be coming either to the Hammond campus on October 19th or on the Westville campus on November 16th. I mean, you have to register, obviously, or at least you'd like people to register. Tell us how folks can register, how students can register, and be ready for the experience itself.
Yes, so we definitely would like you to register. You can go to our website. It's www.pnw.edu/previewPNW. From there, it'll take them to our Preview PNW webpage where they can select a date or select both dates and just register. Let us know that you're coming so we can have things prepared for you. And then if by any chance, if you forget to register or you have a friend that did not register and you're bringing them a day up, we will have staff here doing walk-in registration. So then you can still get you a part of the event as well.
And so, that, again, that's pnw.edu, and it's /preview is the web address specifically set up by Purdue University Northwest for the preview programs coming up. And, Stefan, thank you for spending time with us explaining what used to be known to many people and probably still is in their minds, especially back in college days, as open house. Here's a chance to really experience something that's much more than just opening the doors and letting people wander around and talk to people. Thanks for being with us to talk about it today.
Thank you, Kristen, for allowing us to really explain what Preview PNW is.
You're welcome. Stefan Piggy II is the Associate Director of Recruitment and Events. He is with the Undergraduate Admissions Office with Purdue University Northwest. Kevin Comerford talks with Ty Warner about NERPC in part one of their conversation today on Building Northwest Indiana.
Welcome to another episode of Building Northwest Indiana Radio. My name is Kevin Comerford. I'm the Director of Professional Development at the Construction Advancement Foundation of Northwest Indiana, and I will be serving as your host today. The purpose of Building Northwest Indiana Radio is to give you a little insight into the Northwest Indiana professional construction industry. Today we will be talking about the Northwest Indiana Regional Planning Commission, also known as NERPC. Earlier this year, NERPC adopted a comprehensive long-range regional development plan called the Northwest Indiana 2050 Plan. The plan covers Lake, LaPorte, and Porter counties and essentially lays out a vision which guides development and transportation investments going into the future. My guest today is Ty Warner. Ty is the Executive Director of the Northwest Indiana Regional Planning Commission. Ty, thank you for joining us today.
Kevin, thank you very much for having me. Appreciate being on your program.
Appreciate you being here. Yeah. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about NERPC, you know, kind of what it is, what is your mission of the organization?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, Kevin, it's great to work with the Construction Advancement Foundation. We're kind of neighbors. We are like right across the street from each other from our office location there, which is great, which means that the region's moving forward together between folks that helped to build it and folks that set the vision for what's going to happen. So all works together really well. The Northwestern Indiana Regional Planning Commission has been around a little over 50 years. We just celebrated our 50th birthday. I'm the fourth executive director in that time frame. And I like to say at its most fundamental level, NERPC is the place where all 41 municipalities and the three counties of Lake Porter and LaPorte County all get together on a regular basis to talk about things that are bigger than any one of them. I mean, essentially, that's what it is. It's a council of governments, which means that all those municipalities and counties come together and discuss things that affect them all, or that they can share resources on, or that they can take actions to just try to advance those three counties and move everything forward. So that's at its most basic. We're written into Indiana state law, so we are created by the state of Indiana to exist. And most people know us, though, through the press and other things by what we do in the realm of transportation, because that really is the biggest part of what we do. And not to get all, you know, technical, federal acronyms, all this kind of stuff here, but we are the MPO, or Metropolitan Planning Organization, for Northwest Indiana. And what that means is that when you have a population over a certain threshold, any place in the United States, and this is by federal law, you have to have an MPO in place. And what that does is mean that the highway funds and transportation funds and transit funds that come into the region get allocated to a group of decision makers that are all from that region. So those, even though they're federal transportation funds, they get decided on a local level. And that's really fundamentally what that means. And the way that money all works, because people really contribute to it pretty much every day. Every time you go and fill up your gas tank, 18 cents of that gallon goes to Washington, D.C. And then Washington, D.C. sends that back to the states. And the states allocate it for a whole host of things, but a portion of that goes to the MPOs within that state. Again, to make locally determined decisions on what to do with that money and how best to move the region forward.
Well, that's an interesting background. I mean, being neighbors, I never realized how you guys were funded. So that is very interesting.
Yeah.
So recently in the newspapers, I have seen the Northwest Indiana 2050 plan. I think it was recently adopted, maybe this past spring.
Correct.
But then going back a couple years, I remember seeing something about the 2040 plan. So it seems like you have all these future plans. Can you talk about, you know, these plans of the future and how they come about, and, you know, what is different from the 2040 plan compared to the 2050 plan?
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, the trite answer is that we have to keep looking ahead. So you have to update regional plans every so often to make sure that they reflect current realities, but, you know, more accurately reflect where the region's headed. So that's sort of the trite answer. There's a federal answer, which is that MPO function that I mentioned earlier requires us to do a long-range transportation plan and update it periodically. So that's what that was about. We had 2040 plan, 2050 plan, but the genius of the 2040 plan, and I'm using the word genius because that was before my time, so I'm not claiming that for myself. What happened with the 2040 plan in earlier 2011 was when the first one, when that was adopted. It took the first step and first a big movement of taking what was a federal required transportation plan, which traditionally for MPOs is just transportation, just looking at where are roads going, where's transit going, that sort of thing, and recognize the implications of that on a whole host of stuff. Environment, housing, economy, how do we get people around that can't drive or don't prefer to drive? How do we create networks for bikes, for pedestrians, water trails, all that kind of stuff? So the 2040 plan took a much broader view of the interconnectedness of those things and truly became a regional interconnected plan. And so the 2050 plan built on that base. We didn't throw out the 2040 plan. It just enhanced it to reflect current realities. Still has the same fundamental vision, which is a region that is connected, renewed, united, and vibrant. Those are four key words throughout the plan. And they all mean something. They're not just words that are thrown out there. We talk about those. And even our website is organized according to those vision statements so that it all comes to bear on how we look at the future. And then also narrows it down into four focus areas that have to do with economy in place, environment, mobility, and people and leaders. Those are big topics. But anybody that goes to nirpc.org, www.nirpc.org, can look at those in any number of detail and see what that whole vision is all about. Tries to anticipate where's the region headed and how can we address those challenges by making sure that we are prepared to meet those in terms of all the things I just talked about.
Ty, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Kevin. Privileged to be here. Thank you very much for having me on the program, and thanks for all you do.
Thank you.
And we'll have more from Ty Warner from NERPC and another conversation with Kevin Comerford. Support for Building Northwest Indiana comes from the Construction Advancement Foundation. You can hear Building Northwest Indiana right here on Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Tuesday. And the podcasts are also available online at lakeshorepublicradio.org. This next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs these with intentional conversation to forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
I didn't think I was going to be the one left behind. His name was Elmer, and he was a nice man. I miss him. Yeah, I was not thinking about anybody, anywhere at that time. I was too busy trying to figure out where am I going to get a job and how am I going to survive. He came in and we were introduced and I said, "Hi, how are you?" And I was out the door. I was gone. And a couple of days later, my aunt said, B, Elmer asked if he could talk to you. And I said, what? She said, come on now. So I go out. I said, oh, okay. I said, hey, how you doing? He said, yeah, you want to go to a movie? I said, no. maybe next time, okay? So I put him off a couple of times. And then I was surprised because I had to catch the bus to go to work. He was sitting out there one day with the car, and he blew his horn, which I don't pay any attention to anybody blowing the horn because I don't know who you are in the first place. And I kept on going. So you know how a car kind of slowly drives down the street, and he leaned over. He said, do you remember who I am? And I leaned over and said, well, I think, is your name Elmer? Dumb. Totally stupid. He said, yeah, that's me. He said, do you want to go to a movie? I said, I tell you what, come on in the house. We'll talk about it. And it went from there. We got to know each other pretty good. And about a year later, we got married. Yeah. I don't know if you remember the snowstorm in 67. There were five of us that got stuck together on the train and said, how are we going to get home? But we were lucky enough that one of the ladies on the last South Shore train, her friend, picked her up in a pickup truck. All of you can't get in the front seat, but maybe you can ride in the back. And that's how we got home. When I got home, the snow was, I couldn't even get in my front door. I had to go around to the back door and push it away from the door in order to get in. I was in that house by myself the whole time. Elmer was stuck somewhere, and here I am stuck at home. From that day on, I said, I am not going to Chicago for another job. Before I got married, I thought I was going somewhere else. I had planned on going somewhere else, but I didn't. You know, before I got married, at that time, I thought I was stuck here. But not anymore, I don't.
You can find more local stories at welcomeproject.valpo.edu. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. Indiana Dunes Tourism is working always on ways to attract more tourists into Northwest Indiana, and in particular into the area around the Indiana Dunes and into Porter and LaPorte counties. But there's an interesting and rather innovative method that they would like to bring more tourists into the region. To talk about it today, here's Lorelei Weimer. She's the Executive Director of Indiana Dunes Tourism. And Lorelei, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Well, thank you, Chris, for having us on.
The idea is very innovative. At least I think it is anyway, but it's not unusual for many people. We know that we see cruise ships, of course, on the high seas. But how many times do you get to see a cruise ship on the Great Lakes? And in turn, what was the interest, I guess, that first got you all interested in bringing cruise ships to Northwest Indiana?
Well, you know, believe it or not, this industry on the Great Lakes has been going on for about 20 years. People do not know that cruise ships have been on the Great Lakes, but it was the last uncharted water in terms of the cruises being on the Great Lakes, and it's been a growing industry, which is really exciting. Kay Nelson, who is with the Northwest Indiana Forum, has been on boards that have been talking about the cruises in the Great Lakes, and she just really felt there was an opportunity for us to bring it to Indiana. You know, after Duluth, Minnesota, and Indiana are the only two states at this point that do not have cruise ships coming into their state. Duluth is very close to having it, making it a reality. And once it's a reality in Minnesota, we will be the only state or province that is located, connected to a Great Lake that doesn't have a cruise ship. So we're hoping, Chris, that we can make this a reality.
What are some of the reasons that a Great Lakes cruise is probably much more attractive than taking an ocean cruise these days?
Well, the biggest thing is there's just a lot of unrest worldwide, and they're seeing, because of that unrest, and safety and security is one of those issues that people are wanting to stay a little bit closer to home. And so that is one of the reasons it is growing.
I know that you're working with an organization which is called the Great Lakes Cruising Coalition, and Stephen Burnett is the executive director of the coalition. I guess he's based out of Ontario, so he gets to take the whole Great Lakes into his purview, I suppose. How much work does he and the rest of the coalition working with you at the Indiana Dunes Tourism have to do to be able to bring cruise ships to dock at the Port of Indiana?
Well, so you just hit it perfectly. We are going to be working closely with Stephen. In fact, we will probably be hiring him to come to Porter County to really help us, really coach us through this process, because it is a 24-month process. And the most important thing is we already have the port, and the port is already got a place for the cruise ships to come. So that has already been secured. The really heavy lifting comes with trying to find what I would say programming or creating itineraries that once people come into port, Chris, then the goal is to get them off of the ship and into our communities, and having programming that is really something that they will find valuable, that we can sell to planners that are then able to sell to the cruise ships and say, hey, we have these wonderful itineraries in Porter County that we'd love for you to come and experience. So there's this whole process, but it really starts with developing some very solid itineraries, which, you know, for lack of a better word, has programs on it. So, you know, what can you learn at the national park? What can you learn about our industrial culture that we have that is so strong? You know, so we see that industry/sand tour as a real key component.
And I get the impression that this idea of cruise ships visiting Northwest Indiana off the Great Lakes has gone on long before the Indiana Dunes National Park became official.
That is correct. You know, we started, talking about the idea with the Northwest Indiana Forum, and then our assistant director really started to take a deep dive into really understanding the cruise lines and understanding the cruise industry on the Great Lakes. And then, of course, then lo and behold, we become a national park. And, you know, we recognize the fact that because we are the 61st national park in the nation, that can only help us, Chris, in terms of us trying to secure cruise ships to our port.
Speaking of the cruise ships, of course, we always know about the big ones that are out there on the ocean making the big trips overseas as well as around the United States. What are the sizes of these ones that traverse the Great Lakes and the ones that are likely to come to Northwest Indiana?
That's a great question. So, you know, when you think about the ones where you're like going out of Miami or New Orleans and you're thinking of those big Caribbean cruises, those are massive cruise ships. And certainly we cannot have those types of size cruise ships in the Great Lakes. So you're looking at anywhere that could be as small as maybe a boat that houses 40 people all the way up to like over 400 people.
Oh.
I think 400 is about the max. So the size is a lot smaller than you would see on those larger cruises that a lot of people think of, but it's more costly as well. You know, so it can run anywhere from, you know, $2,000 to $10,000 per person to be on one of these cruise ships. You know, because they are smaller boats, they're not like a day excursion. Some of these cruises are going up to 14 days. So it is like your typical cruise in the sense that once you get on, you're going to different ports of calls, and it's definitely a wonderful vacation. It can be, like I said, up to 2 weeks.
It sounds like a great idea to be able to make a nice summer vacation. And like I say, if you only have a couple weeks to work with, many people I know have to block out a lot more time than that if they're making an overseas cruise or an ocean cruise. And then I know for sure they can take advantage of getting on board someplace, whatever port's close to wherever they live, and getting on board one of these ships and then making the trip around for about a week or so and enjoying all these ports of call, literally ports of call, too, I imagine.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's two types of folks that are taking these types of cruise ships. So one is more of a traditional cruiser where they're, you know, they're more the people that are retired. And they, once they get off the cruise, they'll go on motor coaches and do some excursions that way. But there's a new group that is coming on board that is wanting to be more active. And they're looking for more hands-on experience, wanting more adventure-type excursions once they get into a port of call. And we feel we can benefit both groups. We think we're a good match for both groups, especially the ones that want that more that adventure feel and hands-on experience. So we think we line up perfectly with the type of people that are taking the cruises today.
So it sounds like with this this work that's underway now to not only make the arrangements to get the process started, the shopping list for having some place for folks to visit once they get off the ship there at the Port of Indiana, and that, of course, is going to get the Indiana Dunes Tourism very much involved in that, I would imagine. Are you looking at like maybe 2022 to get the process all wrapped up and have these cruise ships visiting us?
Absolutely. So one of the things, we know that, you know, if you go at the speed of light, you're still talking about a 24-month process. And we have already started to work with potential partners for the excursions that we want to put together, you know, those itineraries. So we are looking at, you know, if we could do the 24 months, that would be fantastic. So that is kind of what we're eyeing, is trying to get it in within those 2 years. And, you know, we're already off to a really good start, Chris, and we are going to be become members of two critical groups. One of them is Stephen's group. Mm-hmm. And then the next step is to bring Stephen here to really help coach us through this whole process, because he has the expertise to do this where we don't, and so we have a lot to learn from him. But so we figured, let's work with the best, right, and make sure that if we can do this, let's make sure we're doing it right.
Well, Lorelei, thank you for the information today, and the best of luck to you and all at the Indiana Dunes Tourism to get this idea of bringing cruise ships to the Great Lakes down home to Northwest Indiana. Be sure. Thanks for being with us to talk about it today.
Well, thank you, Chris. We always appreciate being on your show. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Lorelei Weimer is Executive Director of Indiana Dunes Tourism. A recent study shows state Supreme Courts across the country lack gender and racial diversity, and Indiana is no exception. All but three of the 110 justices in Hoosier state history have been white men. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith talked to Chief Justice Loretta Rush, the state's first female Chief Justice, about the issue.
So this report from the Brennan Center indicates that Indiana is certainly not alone, but its state Supreme Court, both currently and in its history, really lacks a lot of diversity. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
Why do you think that is?
I wish I knew. And we're looking at that issue because it really isn't acceptable. When you look at the role of judicial branch and our responsibility and for the people to come, I mean, the 1.3 million cases that we have coming before us, I think it's important that our branch represent the diversity of our people.
Is this a problem that permeates further than the state Supreme Court? Is this a problem of the judiciary in Indiana as a whole?
I think it's a problem of all government. I mean, I think it's not just the judiciary. And I think the Brennan Center report is great because it also talked about different rationales that they came up with in their studies on the whys. And I just ran the numbers in Indiana so we could look at who are our attorneys in Indiana. We have 22,000. Attorneys, and they are able to, you don't have to put your race down. The majority do. So 75% are white, 3.24% are African American, 1.41% are Hispanic. And then when you look at the judges, we have 677 judicial officers, of which 80% are Caucasian. I mean, it sort of matches the same. 80% are Caucasian, 12% are unknown, over 5% are African American, over 1% are Hispanic. So what can we do to bolster those numbers? What can we do to sort of look back and tap on the shoulders to say it? And we're working on that. So when you look at the ICLEO program that we have, Indiana Continuing Legal Education Opportunity, we've had 605 graduates from the program, and those are traditionally law students of color, traditionally underrepresented as for diversity in it. And then going back even further, I just had a conversation with IU in Bloomington, Dean Parrish, in the last couple of weeks about starting a program for undergraduate students. Again, a feeder program to get more traditionally underrepresented individuals in the pipeline towards being lawyers and then judges. I have looked at, we make a real effort to, and we're successful in appointing a number of attorneys of color to some of our boards and commissions. Again, those are different ways that are a path.
I think when people hear about the idea of diversity, it feels to a lot of people like a box that just has to be checked. Oh, we need to be more diverse. Why is it important that our state courts are more diverse?
You know, I mean, I guess I'm a living example. I mean, when I graduated from law school in 1983, you know, less than 20% of the law school class were women. If somebody asked me, can you be a judge? We had never had a woman on the U.S. Supreme Court at that time, so I didn't see myself as a judge. Now, you know, I had a little girl send me a fourth grader, her name was Maddie, and who I didn't know, and she sent me a picture of herself for History Day this year. She had a black wig on, thick back black glasses and a robe, and she dressed up as the Chief Justice of Indiana. We were in the Supreme Court, and this dad was there with his daughter, and the daughter goes, OMG, Dad, the Chief Justice is a girl. I mean, I think you need to see it.
The two justices of color, Myra Selby and Justice Rucker, were both appointed by Democrats. Do you think there's partisanship behind some of the lack of diversity?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know the. I can't tell you that I see that. I'd love to see it on a nonpartisan basis, and maybe that would be another way that we could have a larger pool.
Thank you so much for sitting down and talking with me.
Thank you.
There are a group of students who attend the Ivy Tech Community College campuses in Lake County and over in Valparaiso. We'll talk more about the involved organization that they are with, but they are sponsoring a very special clothing giveaway today in East Chicago. We have with us, according to my list, we have Justin Zahada and Alicia Craig Davis, Starielle Wright, Caitlin Bodeau, and Crystal Sykes. They are all students at Ivy Tech Community College, someplace here in the region. And thank you all for joining us here on Regionally Speaking today.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Well,
thank you.
You're welcome. Well, first take a minute, and somebody can, I'll let you identify who. Just kind of jump in and tell us a little bit more about the honors program that you're in. It's called My Honors, but in particular, it's a leadership course, which is called Honors Experimental Leadership Project. Tell us a little bit about what HELP is all about.
Okay. We're in the IBM program, and for one of our classes called Leadership, we have to do this Honors Experimental Leadership Project. And basically, the students group in teams in their region, and they identify a community issue, and we have sort of found a way to solve that. So you got to, like, do a service project. So we identified an issue in our community and decided to do a project to fix that.
Now, I'm guessing that you all and your advisor, Daniel Hart, got together to talk about this and in kind of planning what kind of project you were going to do. How did you come up with the idea of the clothing giveaway that's going to be at the Cross Church on Elm Street in East Chicago today?
Well, we knew that low-income families are going to find it kind of difficult, you know, to get what they need clothing-wise and blanket-wise, you know, for the fall and winter season that's coming. And we just wanted to try to alleviate as much stress as possible by doing even just something as small as getting them clothes, coats and whatnot.
Do you have friends or family members or neighbors that are in the situation, and you kind of learned along the way that they might need a little help getting ready for winter?
Well, I'm a single mom. Mm-hmm. I'm Alicia, and I'm a single mom, so I know firsthand about how difficult it is to get to dress kids for the winter season when you're low on funds. A company like this actually helped me out last fall.
Oh, wonderful.
Greatly.
That's great.
So I'm honored to be a part of this.
So you have some, I guess, personal experience, obviously, in having to not only deal with taking advantage of the service, but also, I guess, in a way, in helping organize today's event, too, because you had a chance to see how the other group did it, and you got to take some ideas from them, too, I bet.
Yes, yes. And we picked the brains of some of the people who did this before.
Mm-hmm.
We made some calls and we got tips on what to do, on who to call, how to get donations, all of it.
Now, the church, the Cross Church, as it's called, is at 3616 Elm Street in East Chicago. Did you or did Ms. Hart make the arrangements as your advisor to get this set up for the giveaway through them this time?
We did everything.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, we did everything. We reached out to people, and it was difficult trying to find a space that was big enough and people who were willing to let us use their space. But through our leadership class, we learned how to manage it, and mm-hmm. we got it done.
Did you have a chance to, in the days ahead here, to let people know about the clothing giveaway happening there at the church so folks in the neighborhood and people around the area will be able to come over and pick up some clothing?
We made flyers and we put them like in the schools and in the community so people would be aware of the event today.
That's great.
And I also use social media.
That's one. Well, that's,
social media lets everyone know.
That's right. And that's the fastest way to get the word out, to be sure, too. From 3 o'clock until 5 mm-hmm. o'clock, and it'll be held at the Cross Church, which, again, is at 3616 Elm Street in East Chicago. Now, if anybody is interested and they'd like some more information ahead of the event coming up this afternoon, how can they find out more now?
Well, you can actually call me.
Okay.
I don't mind putting my phone number out there. It's 630-926-8835, and my name is Alicia. And I think Justin was willing to take emails.
My email is jzazada1@ivytech.edu, jzazada1 @ivytech.edu.
Aside from clothing and whatnot, the things that we can't provide, like help with rental assistance, help with the utility bills, we actually have the township of East Chicago. They will be setting up a table where everyone can apply for that assistance.
That's great. Once again, it's the help group there at Ivy Tech Community College here in Lake County and in Valparaiso getting together. The help group is a part of the honors program that they're all participating in. And the students from the region are going to be putting on a clothing giveaway that's going to happen this afternoon, Tuesday the 8th, from 3 o'clock until 5 o'clock. And it'll be held at the Cross Church at 3616 Elm Street. And Justin Zahada and Elena Craig Davis and Stariel Wright and Caitlin Bodo and Crystal Sykes, thank you all for joining us today, and good luck on the adventure. And we hope that we'll find out more, and maybe you'll have another similar event coming up here soon as while you're still involved in the honors program.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Paul Crazy Legs Stofko is, by description I have before me, an ultra runner, a race director, a father, a running coach, and personal trainer. Not all in that order, I suppose. But he's also working on some small races and also consulting some new race directors about how to best do a race. And in particular, one coming up here that Lakeshore Public Media is proud to partner with. It's coming up very soon. It's Nerds on the Run, a 5K walk and run. And to find out more about it, we have Paul to talk about it. Paul? Shall I refer to you as Paul or Crazy Legs?
Paul will be fine.
That's good. We'll leave it at that then. Thank you, Paul, for joining us on Regionally Speaking today. Tell us a little bit more, first off, about the run itself, because we said Lakeshore Public Media is a very proud partner in all this. How did this all get about? When's it happening? And where should people find out more information about it?
So I'm a sustaining member. So actually, Carl was going back and forth because we were having some issues with my T-shirt, my nerd T-shirt, that from PBS. So he saw that I was a race director and asked me if they'd be interested in a partnership to, you know, kind of have a 5K and kind of benefit you guys. So I said, no, that's what I do. So that would be great. So the race is going to be held this Sunday, and it's going to be at Stony Run Park, which is in Hebron, Indiana. Mm-hmm. And it's most of it's going to be a little bit of pavement, a little bit of trail. So it's kind of like a mixed of those two terrains out there. And that starts at 9 a.m. We can, the online signups, just to make it easier for everybody, raceroster.com is the people that kind of handle the registration. If you just put in the search Nerds on the Run, and it should come up with that particular race with all the information on there to sign up, and then also any information about the details of the race as well. Mm-hmm.
How did you make the transition from being just a runner, I guess even to be an ultra runner, to get into the idea of being a running coach as well as then now being a director of races themselves?
What kind of happened is one of my jobs, they were having a 5K for just to bring some money in for a different nonprofit organization. So they said, well, Paul, you're a runner. How about you put on this race? You should know all about the ins and outs of running because mm-hmm. you've run races for a while. So that was kind of a trial by fire for me. So kind of learning all the ins and outs of race directing through that. And that was 2006. So that was kind of my first forte into race directing, and then kind of built up and learned more about it. Again, with that kind of a race directing, you make a lot of mistakes when you're doing these races, directing and all that kind of stuff. So that definitely, it's just a passion. You kind of keep up with it. So mm-hmm. I'm still doing it now. And then in terms of coaching. Naturally, everybody comes to me when there's been running for 25 years. So, you know, everybody always asks this question or that question. So kind of said, well, I should just be a coach because, you know, everybody's always asking me questions every day about certain particular nutrition or training programs that they want to get involved in for different distances that they like to try.
Is that how you got into the personal trainer biz, so to speak,
correct,
as well?
Yeah. So I kind of was always interested in health and fitness during, I actually started, went to Purdue Cal, which is Purdue North Central, and kind of went there and got a nutritionist degree, associate's degree in nutrition, and then I went off to Arizona, Flagstaff, Arizona, and I got my bachelor's degree out there in exercise science. So kind of wraps together with all the stuff I've been doing from the running and the coaching and my background as well in terms of college that always been involved in health and fitness.
Lakeshore Public Media is partnering with the Crazy Legs Race Series on this 5K run and walk that is coming up this weekend. Tell us more about the Crazy Legs Race Series and the fact that it tends to focus in on what are called non-pavement races. That's something that probably many people have seen, but they probably are not as familiar with, I'm sure, as a lot of pavement races that have happened here in the region.
Correct. So when I kind of developed the series, I felt like a lot of the parks in Northwest Indiana in different counties, the Lake, LaPorte, and Porter counties, are kind of not, nobody kind of visits them because maybe they have never had the opportunity to come there. So that was the main purpose of that, to start the series, is try to go into different parks that are maybe underutilized or never visited because, you know, they never were able to go on there. So, and everybody likes to something different, you know, and I think a lot of people have started off, when they started running, they always, you know, run around their neighborhood, and then they're off to maybe running the 5Ks on pavement, and then they want kind of a new experience. So the trail runs are definitely more challenging. You know, there's some rocks, roots, hills, water crossings, whatever that may be, depending on the terrain that we have at the different parks. So yeah. I think the uniqueness of it definitely brings a little bit people just want something a little bit different. Maybe the, you know, the traditional 5K is something that they're maybe not excited about anymore. So I think the trail running kind of brings there. And again, it's, you can experience parks in a different way. Maybe you are not able to get out there for certain events that they have at the park, but then this, you'll be able to kind of see the park, you know, running a 5 or 10K, and then maybe, hopefully, the whole idea with this is to bring people back to those parks that are in Northwest Indiana. And I mean, we got a lot of great parks that people don't even realize that they're so close to. Okay.
Do you have to train differently to be able to run on these non-pavement trails, I guess, or tracks, I guess, as put up for a particular race?
Yeah, I would say what we usually do is we try to, and still in terms of the distance you would do for a 5 or 10K, I guess the issue here now when you're on the trails, there's a lot of more hazards in terms of tripping or things like that, roots and rocks. So you have to be a little bit more aware of what the surroundings are, and especially like, for instance, in a trail run, we have to have directional arrows or flags to guide you. It's a little more straightforward in a 5K pavement race that, you know, oh, you turn right here, you can kind of see that. With a trail race, you got to be kind of aware of your situation and surroundings to make sure you're going the correct way. A lot of people that jump from like the non-pavement or the pavement races to non-pavement have a little difficulty in forgetting that they have to follow the trail markings because the park might have a wide variety of trails and we're only using one certain path to get the 5K or 10K or whatever the distance may be. So I think in terms of trains, about the same, but I think the awareness is a little bit different when you're running in trails.
All right, Paul, take this last moment here and give us an idea again about the particulars about the upcoming Nerds on the Run 5K run and walk that's happening this weekend.
So yes, so again, this Sunday, the start time is 9 a.m. You can find all the information to register online from, go on to raceroster.com and just look up Nerds on the Run. Now, the online sign-ups will close Friday night, but don't worry, we're going to have race day registration there starting at 8:15. So if you're kind of on the fence if you want to do it or not, race day registration will be available at 8:15, and then the race starts at 9. When you come into the park, we're at Stony Run Park, you're going to, as you enter the facility, you're going to, there's going to be a open area there, and we also have a shelter there where you're going to have all the registration, race day sign up, and all that information there when you first get into the park.
Well, Paul Sofko, thank you very much for talking about the Nerds on the Run 5K run and walk coming up this weekend, and to everybody who's involved in these particularly difficult races for some, maybe not for others. It's a different concept, and that's what the Crazy Legs Race Series is all about. Thank you for being with us to talk about it today.
No problem. Thank you, Chris.
Two environmental groups are filing an intent to sue Northwest Indiana Steel Company ArcelorMittal. And as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Thiel tells us, the Environmental Law and Policy Center and the Hoosier Environmental Council say that the company has not been penalized for more than 100 environmental violations in the last 4 years.
In August, ArcelorMittal's Burns Harbor facility discharged excess cyanide and ammonia into the Little Calumet River, killing about 3,000 fish and forcing beaches to close temporarily. Jeffrey Hammonds with the Environmental Law and Policy Center says the company is supposed to notify regulators immediately when a harmful spill occurs, but ArcelorMittal waited 4 days.
In the meantime, you had people who were worried about, well, you know, they were in the water and they had no idea that this was in the water because nobody told them.
In a statement, an ArcelorMittal spokesperson says the company continues to focus on compliance and hopes to understand the root cause of the August discharge to prevent similar incidents in the future. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Rebecca Thiel.
The brother of Indiana U.S. Senator Mike Braun is suspending his campaign for the 5th District congressional seat because of an unnamed health issue. In a written statement issued yesterday, according to the Braun family, Braun is frustrated and disappointed to suspend his campaign. The Republican had filed his paperwork to run in 2020 in August. He did not mention his health issue in particular in his statement, and his campaign did not give any more details. The campaign also has not said if or when Braun will return. 4 other Republicans and 2 Democrats have filed to run for the 5th District congressional seat, where incumbent Republican Susan Brooks is not running for re-election. And this is Braun's second attempt to run for Congress. He was an unsuccessful candidate for the 4th District in Congress back in 2018. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back with you tomorrow.